Okay, so John, we could do Tuesday, which is what we normally do.
Yeah.
We could go Thursdays that day.
That could work.
What about Sunday?
Ooh, Sunday. I don't know about Sunday.
What's going on, fellas?
Just trying to figure out when we're releasing this episode.
We don't have that figured out yet.
Well, we're just trying to, you know, figure out what the episode's actually going to be about and what day it's going to come out on.
Oh, screw it. Let's just do a show about days of the week.
Ding, ding. Vinyl Gang, you got the name of the show. It's Days of the Week.
When we did the Cities, Towns, and Other Places, we found out that New York and London were the two most popular places in song. I have looked and looked and looked to see if there is a day that is more popular than others.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would assume it's Saturday, but I haven't found any reference to that as proof.
I'd say Saturday's pretty high up there.
Yeah.
Sunday. Lots of Sunday songs.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the type of stuff that you were listening to, like in high school, the post-punk type stuff, there's a lot of days in those songs.
Yeah, there's a bunch of days. And, you know, ironically, behind, you'd think Friday would be big, but Friday's not huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are a lot of Mondays.
Yeah, there's a lot of Monday. I mean, it's just an interesting thing. I love the themed shows. I hope everybody else does. But what it makes me do is it really makes me dig into my records.
Yeah, it makes you dig.
And I try to do it without looking stuff up at first with the songs that are just up here. And I probably got 5 or 6 that way.
Yeah.
And then I had one, there's one Steely Dan song that I didn't have that album. So
yeah, then it pisses you off and you're like, I got to get that.
Well, no, and then I'm flipping through and I'm like, oh, I do have that album. So
it's just hidden.
You know, it doesn't matter how many records you have. It is hard to keep track of the inventory. And I know a lot of people use Discogs. When Discogs really started like becoming popular, I was so far into collecting that there was no way that I was going to get every album that I have on Discogs.
Yeah, I've kind of dipped my toe in the water, but I have not jumped in full bore.
I got 5 entries and I'm like, F this.
It's fun to do it when you've got the barcode.
Yes.
But
yes.
If you have to manually enter it, there's it could be one of 30 different copies.
Yeah, and the matrices on the dead wax.
I'm not doing that.
No, me neither. But it is fun to, I mean, we did the Cities, Towns, and Other Places. We're going to do Days of the Week. I'd also like to do a Numbers.
Yeah, Numbers would be good.
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
I started making a list of number records that I have, and there are a whole bunch. So.
Well, first, I'm going to mention one thing
okay.
as we progress along. I'm going to start with Monday.
Okay.
But poor little Wednesday, there's not much.
No, there isn't.
There's not much for poor little Wednesday.
I don't have Wednesday. I don't think I have a Wednesday.
Maybe.
You think?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, we'll have to get into it and discover. So let me today's Vinyl Ventures record down, and John will replace it with
Boomtown Rats. On the Fine Art of Surfacing, they released a song, I Don't Like Mondays, which
is about?
About a school shooting that happened in, I think, San Diego? Yeah, in San Diego. And it was a weird school shooting.
Yeah.
It was about a kid who didn't like Mondays.
Yeah. this is kind of an infamous song.
Yeah, it really is.
It's one of the, it literally is, I don't have it, but it is one of the first ones that popped into my head.
Yeah. It's one of those songs that Once you hear it, it's hard to get out of your head. And it came out in 79.
Yeah. And then once you know what it's about,
it's even more macabre.
Or ominous.
Ominous, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good old Bob Geldof and the Boomtown Rats.
Yeah. And this was, it was one of those songs that, of course, in the early 80s when I was in high school, there was no radio station in the world would play this,
right,
except maybe a college radio station.
Yeah.
So you didn't hear that.
Yeah. I think I heard it on a documentary.
Oh,
recently. Yeah. This is one of those songs that everybody seems to know about, but most people probably couldn't tell you who it is.
Yeah.
Most people probably don't know that Bob Geldof played Pink in the movie version of The Wall. I mean, Bob Geldof put together the Live Aid shows.
Yeah, he's a pretty legendary music figure, but he's kind of, I don't want to say he's been lost in the sands of time, but in a way, that's kind of what's happened.
Yeah, yeah. But the things that he's done for the music industry, huge.
Yeah.
Just philanthropist. Obviously, he's a songwriter. He's a tall figure in the music industry.
Yeah, I think he made his mark, and then he just kind of took time off.
Yeah.
The song is on the... It's the last song on side one, which for a single, that's kind of a weird
placement.
Album placement.
Yeah.
You never know about these things, the way they...
It's strange because it seems like British acts are... they're more maybe haphazard about where they put singles on their records.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true because... It's weird that there just seems to be no reason sometimes. And sometimes they'll have an album that has, and the best song is a single only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the U.S., no way. It's all about money.
Oh, definitely. And there is a fine art to tracking in the way that albums are compiled. But you would think that if it was a single released before the album came out, that it would be in the first
couple songs. Yeah,
but I have also heard of acts burying it in the second side, so you have to turn it over and listen to those
we should
talk to somebody. We should do a show about the art of tracking,
because that's I've never heard anybody really talk about it.
Yeah But there is a psychology to it, and I think the record companies have all kinds of different ways that they put records together.
And I'm sure the modern psychology is much different than the past psychology.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter nearly as much.
Well, I'm glad you brought this one because A, I don't have it. And like I said, it's like the first song that I thought of.
Yeah.
I thought of a lot of songs and was like, oh, nope, don't have that. So
I was kind of the same. Or I have them on CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I've got a lot.
Because like New Order, Blue Monday, I've got that on CD.
Yeah.
Because it originally was not released on vinyl until Substance, was kind of their greatest hit.
And then it became a club hit, and wasn't it released on like 12-inch?
Well, when it first came out, it was 12-inch.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was on a re-release of Power, Corruption, and Lies, it was on there. Mm-hmm. And then Substance, which was a greatest hits that came out. When that come out? Mid to late 80s.
Oh, cool. All right, man. That's a good one. I'm not starting in any particular order. But one of the first ones I thought of, and it's still in the condom, this is I Got a Name by Jim Croce, which is a posthumous record. I think it came out in 1973. The song on this is Thursday, and it's on the second side. So this album was released after Jim died, and there were three singles released from this. The title track, I Got a Name, Working at the Car Wash Blues, and what was the third one? Oh boy, I can't remember what the third. There were three singles on this, but Thursday is an interesting song because he never says Thursday in the whole song. So maybe it was a Thursday when he wrote it or something. But, it, you know, I always loved Jim Croce. I heard him a lot when I was a kid. He was all over the radio. And obviously by the time I heard it, he had passed away. And
yeah.
I think there was a point at which I thought he was still alive, and I was really bummed out when I found out he died in a plane crash.
And he was one of those guys. He was a little bit like a Gordon Lightfoot. He was a connector.
Yeah, troubadour kind of guy.
Yeah, he'd connect parents and the younger generation.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of his songs are story songs and,
yeah.
You know, Bad Bad Leroy Brown. You know, the list goes on, and for as short a career as he had, man, his music is timeless.
Oh, he was a magical songwriter. Yeah. He would just crank out some really great hits.
Yeah, and Todd Smith is looking for Jim Croce's guitarist, Maury Mulheiser, I think. Mulheisen. He had an album. He put one album out, and Todd Smith is looking for it. So if any of you have it, get a hold of Todd Smith. I'm sure he'd be happy to get that from you. Anywho, I honestly got this from Half Price Books.
50 cents. Price has been slashed.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know. $11.87 is what it says. $28.11.87. I don't know. Most of the time on Half Price Books, that number at the top is the day that they took it into their inventory, but that doesn't make a lot of sense. But you can see that I got it for 50 cents, and maybe it was a Saturday, and it was Half Price Saturday or something. But yeah, I love all the Jim Croce stuff. I don't have much of it on vinyl, but I do have this record.
Yeah, so. It's he's one of those. A greatest hits album is perfect for me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, man. What's your next one?
Next. Well, you know, I'm trying to go in order.
Well, I appreciate you for that.
And Between the Buttons, the mm-hmm. Rolling Stones,
yep.
Ruby Tuesday.
Yes.
And this is a mono record from
London.
Oh,
that's awesome from yeah. London, yeah. We have a Samesie. I brought a version of that. I brought the Through the Past
yeah.
Darkly Volume 2 with the wacky cover.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was trying to figure out which greatest hits this was on.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't on, I don't think it's on Sucking in the 70s.
Nope. Nope. Yeah. Yep. I always love the packaging of this.
Yeah, that's an awesome packaging.
Yeah. Anywho, I brought that too because, you know, it's a great song.
Yeah.
It's got a great melody. It's very singable and like worms into your brain.
Yeah.
So the first thing I thought of, was my favorite bands and do they have a song or an album named after a day? And like I said, I got through about five of them. This song, Ruby Tuesday, was actually a Keith Richards song. I think he wrote the music and the lyrics. And I think he wrote it about an ex-girlfriend.
Richards explains that the lyrics are about Linda Keith, his girlfriend, which is weird. His girlfriend in the mid-60s.
So if they had gotten married, her name would be Linda Keith Richards.
Yeah. That's just strange.
And I know that Ruby Tuesday is one of the songs that Mick didn't have anything to do with, but he really likes that song.
Yeah, he said it's a wonderful song. So.
Yeah, yeah, and it is a good one. I mean, there aren't a lot of Stones songs like there are Beatles songs that are ballads that
no.
just really, really stand out. You know what I mean? A lot of the Stone stuff is more rhythm and blues based or harder rocking.
Yeah.
So that's another way in which I think the Stones and Beatles just are completely different sides.
Yeah, the Stones pretty much embraced that rhythm and blues and kept that throughout their career.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good one. I don't have many of the early Rolling Stones records, and this is a great one. I love this.
It's a great cover.
What year? Do you know what year this was?
Between the Buttons. Let's see.
Because the photography and the cover of this reminds me a lot of Beatles for Sale, and I wonder if it was.
This came out. The song came out in 66. The album came out in 67.
Okay. So
they recorded in 66 and it was released just inching into 67.
Cool.
In January.
Awesome. Well, that's a good one too.
Reached number 3 in the US.
I love, and yeah, I think it charted higher in the US than it did in the UK.
Yeah, which is
odd.
Very odd.
Very strange. That's a good one, man.
Okay. You're next.
Am I next? One of the first songs that popped into my head was Another Saturday Night by Sam Cooke. And, you know, I have it on multiple records. I love this Greatest Hits. This is an RCA Greatest Hits. Authentic Golden Treasury Collector's Edition. And
I like that cover.
Yeah, it's an RCA cover. Yeah, when I saw this, I think, $8? It's three records.
Three records?
Yeah. And is it from Half Price Books? No. Big Guy Music. I don't know where Big Guy Music is. But yeah, I got it for $8 for three records. And I don't think you can beat that. There's a bunch of compilations out there.
Yeah. And Sam's one of those guys. He just is such a wonderful singer.
Yeah. Kind of like a lot of ballads, but also just a party type singer.
Yeah.
You know,
he has fun.
Upbeat music.
Yeah.
The live album that he did that we both have. That's fantastic.
I love that album.
Yeah. And the performance on it it's a moment in time.
Yeah. That makes you wish, God, I wish I would have seen that guy live.
Or that he was still around. And I'll just show it. This, if you guys want a fantastic Sam Cooke collection, Portrait of a Legend, 51 to 64, is just absolutely wonderful.
That's going to be everything and then some.
Yeah, and Another Saturday Night, of course, is on that one too. But let me see here. I thought I had. Yeah, Another Saturday Night came out in 1963. From Ain't That Good News was the album, and it reached number 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 and number 1 on the R&B chart for just 1 week. And in the UK, the song peaked at number 23 on the UK singles chart. So, you know, he was just one of those stars that burned really, really brightly.
Yeah.
And, kind of originally started out as a gospel singer with the Soul Stirrers and had his own career. But at the time, record companies wanted to make black singers a little more mainstream and, for lack of a better term, a little more white. And, you know, even working within that confine, he's one of the best voices ever.
Oh,
in recorded music. And my wife and I danced to a Sam Cooke song for our first dance. And
at your wedding. Yeah.
And
that's super awesome.
And I've been a huge Sam Cooke fan since then. And she loves him now too. So it's kind of a cool little connection there. But I could put anything by him on and just be fine to listen to it all the way through. So, but if you find a 3-album Sam Cooke collection for $8, buy it.
All right, I'm going to do a little rewind. I was not wrong what I was about to say about the Rolling Stones' Between the Buttons.
Okay.
Actually,
we're going back.
So we're doing a rewind. Just because I think it's important to point this out. Ruby Tuesday was included on the U.S. version of this album.
Between the Buttons.
While it was left out on the British version.
And is this the... So this is the U.S. version?
Yeah, because it's on there.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's...
Well, and it may even be an import. No, it's printed in the USA.
It just goes back to that mentality that the record companies had between singles and albums. And this predates basically the idea of the album that we talked with Keith about on his show.
Yeah. And it's back to what we were talking about with singles.
Yeah.
Because they intentionally left it off the album and just pressed the single.
Very interesting.
So people would buy the single and the album.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Cool. Buy.
I mean, I don't see anything wrong with that thought.
No.
At all.
No. I mean, you got to buy.
I'm not a 45 guy, but, you know, If I am a completist and I am like absolutely head over heels crazy about an artist, I will buy as much as I can from that artist. Anything else on Between the Buttons?
No, that's it.
What is? Charlie's got the buttons on his jacket there.
Yeah, what are we, Between the Buttons.
What are we missing?
I don't know.
We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about art some other time.
Yeah. So what is your next one?
So after we've done that, so that was my, that was a Tuesday song.
Tuesday. I like how you're going in order and I'm just willy-nilly.
So I'm still doing Tuesday. Oh. And this is a Lynyrd Skynyrd Greatest Hits. Oh. Collected, sorry. Yeah,
that's
collected.
Great. That's great.
It sounds more.
Well, the different record companies are doing these collected things.
And that's actually, and this is an MOV.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice.
And
but,
you have it in there backwards, but that's okay.
Yeah. And this is actually a twofer.
Yeah.
Because Tuesday's Gone is
and
on this. And
Saturday Night Special. Which I have Street Survivors. And that I have a MoFi version of Street Survivors with the original cover. But that's the only Lynyrd Skynyrd I have. And that's a shame. I mean, for a band like Lynyrd Skynyrd, if you're a fan of a few of the songs, we've talked about it a million times, the greatest hits are really, really good. Because it does. It just takes that cross-section of the band's entire catalog. And I, again, until I started looking for these records today, I could have told you that I had two or three Skynyrd records, but I don't.
And
this is a good one.
They were, yeah, I enjoy this, but they were the enemy.
Yeah, of course.
Because growing up, I mean, everybody wanted to hear Freebird, and I hated that song. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and they were just the epitome of what the pedestrians listened to.
Yeah, yeah. Not the cool post-punk,
yeah, they weren't
gothy.
The cool goth fun band. And there was no, you know, there was no mistake about it. They were complete Americana.
Oh, yeah. It's Skynyrd now. We just lost the last original member of Skynyrd. So now, from what I've heard at their live shows, they consider themselves a tribute to the music of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Oh, that's good.
It's kind of the way they handle it, which I think is pretty classy.
Yeah, that's a classy way to handle
that
it.
That band has been through so much, you know, and so early on they had the plane crash and the members of the band dying, including the lead singer. And being able to transcend that and move forward is huge.
And I mean, from that point, they were still big for the next,
30 years.
30 years, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's a great story. And I'm glad that you brought some Skynyrd.
Yeah.
I love the MOV version of that. I think that came up on one of my vinyl groups. And I was like this close to buying it. And I saw it was an MOV, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, these are typically like $40 because they're two records.
Yeah, this I got a pretty good price on this, if I remember right.
Any MOV press is worth having.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, that's a good one, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I have another classic. Some Harry Chapin. And look, I don't know if I paid that or not. But Sniper and other love songs. But the song on here is Sunday Morning Sunshine, which is great. I love Harry Chapin. He's kind of another sort of in that Jim Croce vein story song. I think of guys like Jim Croce and Nielsen and Harry Chapin. They're just kind of a step above from a songwriting perspective. You know?
Yeah.
And Sunday Morning Sunshine, this was on his 72 album, Sniper and Other Love Songs. It was released as a single that same year, and it was a top 20 hit. And, you know, I don't have a lot of Harry Chapin, so this is a great one to have. I love the picture on the back of him jamming with the band. But, I mean, that's the thing about, what is that? Is that like a I don't know what that is. That's almost like one of those lights that the doctors would turn on.
It does look like a medical, some sort of medical. It is. It's some sort of flashlight because there's the, I don't know.
Huh.
A magnifying glass, maybe.
Yeah. I love the picture of him there, too. But like I was saying, I think of him as just like on another level songwriting-wise. Yeah. And those story songs exist everywhere. And, you know, everywhere from pop to rock to heavy metal to country to the more singer-songwriter type dudes. And those types of songs are always great to throw on a turntable and give a listen to. But
yeah.
Sunday Morning Sunshine, give it a listen. It's a great song.
Harry
Chapin.
Looking very 70s. Proud of you, Harry.
Absolutely.
Next up. All right. Our good old friends, Blondie. And I got to remember which song I
see those parallel lines.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah.
Blondie, Sunday Girl.
Yeah.
And this album was kind of Blondie's big
breakout.
Yeah, big album. Breakout. And it had no less than 6 singles.
Yeah.
6 singles from one album.
Was it 79?
Yeah, 78.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have this record. It's the only Blondie record I have.
It's a good one to have. If you're going to get a Blondie record, this is the one to have.
It's the greatest hits.
Yeah. Essentially, it's the greatest hits. But Sunday Girl was the 5th single released, and it didn't come out until May of 79.
Okay. Yeah. That I always loved Blondie as a kid. I think obviously it was because of Deborah Harry.
Yeah.
I just thought she was beautiful. She was a sex symbol in the 70s. And the other thing about it, if you think about it, there really weren't any bands with female front people.
Not a lot.
Like you had Carole King and you had artists, you had women who were individual artists, but nobody had really seen anybody that looks like her leading a band before she did.
Yeah. And I think intentionally the band
played that up.
We're all guys.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. And I always love the black and white with the skinny ties and her wearing the white dress on the cover. That's awesome. What's on the back? Oh yeah. More relaxed pose, and you see
the shoes.
You see all their shoes.
Yeah.
I don't even know that I know the song Sunday Girl.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with that one either. Like, ooh.
Yeah, that's a deep cut.
Yeah, and Blondie is not a band that I curate a lot.
Right.
I think I've got a couple of Blondie albums, but they were never, you know, although they were in my circle of music, they were never somebody that I really seeked out.
Prioritized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they're a perfect example. They catch fire.
Yeah.
And of course they're going to release as many singles off of it. I mean, and it was at a time when like pop was intermingling with disco and, you know, they're going to release as many songs off that album as they can.
Yeah.
And really, this is the last time they had a hit, right?
Well, Rapture.
Oh, was Rapture the next record?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't even remember the name of that record. It wasn't named after a day of the week. I have no idea.
No.
This is Chrysalis Records, by the way, with a little butterfly, in case any of you brand geeks are watching. Yeah, that's a good one. I actually flipped by that one today, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was like looking through my records, and there goes Blondie. I had no idea about Sunday Girl.
It's one of those songs that doesn't, I didn't think of being Blondie, but then I'm, you know, typing in some searches, and it's like, oh, Blondie.
When I was like looking this morning, bleary-eyed, after I came up with the ones that I came up with, which were, I think, 4 or 5 of them, I was just thinking back to a time when you wouldn't have had that ability.
No.
You know what I mean?
Where you had to pull out every record and look at all the songs.
Right. Right. Can you imagine how much freaking time that would have taken? It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Suddenly it takes us 8 hours to do a 2-hour show.
Yeah, then Keith would have been waiting around twice as long.
Yeah.
Or maybe 3 times. So that's a good one. Oh, geez. Oh. Sorry.
And it was a cutout at one time.
Yeah, I always think it's interesting the difference between why were some of the cutouts punched as opposed to cut?
Probably just for record.
Because everybody had a hole punch or
everybody
something?
Had a hole punch. It was easy to punch.
Yeah, so strange. Like, also, like when paperback books wouldn't sell, the bookstores would like rip the covers off of them and throw them away.
Oh. Why do that?
Yeah, so nobody else can take it and try to sell it.
I mean, can you imagine being in a record store and having to make cutouts? When I worked at a record store, we didn't have a cutout bin, but another record store in the mall had a cutout bin. I think we just put a sales sticker, a sales sticker.
I'm not sure that most of the record stores did the cutouts themselves. I think the distributors did because they knew how many units were out there in the stores.
Oh,
I think that's the way it happened.
And cutouts may have not have been that big of a deal in the early 80s.
Yeah, I don't think they were either. I mean, I think they existed, but certainly not to the degree that they do now.
Because RCA had that Nice Price series.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. We should do a show about cutouts. So, one of the first dudes that I thought of when I thought of days of the week was Johnny Cash, of course, and the Kris Kristofferson song, Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are many more Johnny Cash Days of the Week songs. Didn't even have to look it up. This is the one I knew I had and the one I wanted to talk about because it's basically a song about, you know, being messed up.
Yeah.
And waking up Sunday and feeling like you'd rather be dead. Everybody can relate to that, at least most people. I love the cover of this too. And this is the Johnny Cash collection, his greatest hits. Volume 2. Now look at the songs on this. A Boy Named Sue, Hey Porter, Guess Things Happen That Way, Blistered, Big River, Long-Legged Guitar Picking Man, Folsom Prison Blues, Sunday Morning Coming Down, If I Were a Carpenter, France's Man Johnny, Daddy Sang Bass. So this I got from my wife's step family. They had a bunch of records.
And
water damage on it, but the record plays absolutely perfectly. And Sunday Morning Coming Down is just a great song.
Yeah.
It makes sense that Kris Kristofferson wrote it.
I think I originally, I'd picked up a bunch of vinyl and I had the Kristofferson
version. Yeah.
But I listened to the whole thing and I'm like, I don't need to hang on to this.
Yeah.
It's one of those, I needed to thin the herd.
I like some of Kristofferson's stuff that he performs, but to me, he's a songwriter.
Yeah.
To me, he's a poet. I mean, he does everything.
Yeah, he really does.
Actor, songwriter, singer, drinker.
Drinker? Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Yeah, so this song reached 55 on the Billboard Hot Country Singles chart and 81 on the Hot 100 Pop chart in 1969. And in 2021, it was listed as number 476 on Rolling Stone's top 500 best songs of all time. And it also appeared on Kristofferson's album, Kristofferson, which I think was his first record, or it might've been his second one. I can't remember, but yeah, there are certain songs, that when you think about a theme, just pop in your mind. And that was definitely one of them.
So, yeah. I'm with you. I'd rather hear Johnny Cash sing this song than Kristofferson. Not that Kristofferson's a bad singer. I just would rather hear Johnny Cash.
Yeah. He definitely brought it to life, for sure. We don't talk about a lot of country on the show, but I bet we're going to in the years coming.
Oh, boy.
What's your next one?
All right, next. This is the song the first song that popped in my head.
You know, I have a lot of Chicago.
Chicago.
And I have this record, and I didn't even think of it.
Saturday in the Park.
Yeah. It's such a good song. Good album, man.
And this is going to be like the greatest hit show. Mm-hmm. But
This is Chicago 9, the greatest hits.
Yeah, and I love this cover.
Yeah,
I do I've too. Always loved it. And this is another one my musical sensei cousin had on his wall that I'm like, I got to get that album.
Yeah, yeah. All of their covers, they really did an awesome job. The chocolate one.
Yeah.
And that they did a really good job of sticking with that design of their name.
Yeah, and the chocolate one was when the song originally appeared.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, which was Alma Mater?
Huh. Okay.
Is that right? Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the one you're talking about?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's the single cover.
Oh, okay.
Alma Mater must have been the B-side.
Oh, that was the B-side. Yeah. Sorry.
Yep. I think it was on Chicago 2 originally.
It was on one of the... No, from Chicago 5.
Oh, from the first one. Oh, 5.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're just trying... Now we're getting our numbers and our days mixed up.
Well, and Chicago went with the Roman... They're like the Super Bowl. They went with the Roman numeral forever.
Yeah. Yeah, they went up through... Well, I think they still do it.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. I mean, they've had albums that they've strayed from that, but yeah.
Whatever works.
If something is working, stick with it. But what are the other tunes on this?
Well, and in their infinite wisdom, you know, nothing's listed anywhere.
Right. You got to love that. I'll look it up.
Yeah, there's a...
This is exactly what people want to do, is hear me fiddling around with the records. And of course, it's not even a printed...
No.
Crap.
You got to really go
in. Man, this is really... Okay, so... Oh, shit. I can't even read that. 25 or 624, Color My World, Just You and Me, Saturday in the Park, Feeling Stronger Every Day. That's a good one. And I love the Columbia label. Man, that print is small.
It is tiny.
Make Me Smile, Wishing You Were Here, Call Me... Call on Me, I've Been Searching So Long, and Beginnings. So, do you want to put it back up?
I'll put it up.
Okay, good. No, that's a good one. I didn't even think about that one.
That's amazing.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. And there are other ones that I'm like, oh, I wish I had that, but I may have it on. And this is what happens collecting when you take a break from vinyl. And I took a break. I mean, because when
CDs started happening.
Yeah, when record companies, when they say, we're not going to produce albums anymore, we're only producing CDs, I'm like, well, that's it. I'm flipping over. So I took a break.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't really get back into it until we got back in. Yeah. So I took a break around 89. But I kept all my... I never got rid of any albums. I kept them all housed really good.
I don't think anybody got rid of any albums. I mean...
From the looks of shows, yeah.
When you go to shows and the crazy rare stuff that you end up seeing, I mean, where the hell did people keep this stuff? Because it's not... I mean, the amount of CDs I have, I've probably got 2,400 CDs, and that takes up a lot of space.
Yeah,
and CDs they're... Much smaller
than
vinyl, but where the hell did people keep this stuff?
And, you know, I think the majority of people had maybe, you know, under 100 albums.
Mm-hmm. Probably. And then, you know, I'm sure at some point when the, like, half-priced books of the world popped up, people would be like, oh, I've got those records sitting around. I'll take a truckload of them over there and get $15, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting thing to think about. But from a release standpoint, you're right. The industry came to an absolute close. And it was cassettes, which were on their way out, but portable, and then CDs. So, well, my next one is one that I could have sworn that I did not have. And this is Katie Lied by Steely Dan. And the song's Black Friday. The song is about Friday, September 24, 1869, where there was a failed ploy that left many wealthy investors broke. The investors tried to corner the market on gold, buying as much of it as they could and driving up the price. But when the government found out, it released $4 million worth of gold into the market, which drove the price down and clobbered the investors. So, yeah.
Huh.
I've always loved the back of this record. Black Friday is the first song on side one. But look at how young these dudes are. You know, there they are. The masterminds right there. Donald Fagen, Walter Becker. Anywho, it seems like people are either Steely Dan fans or not.
Yeah. And but, I've tried really hard.
What I love about the band is just the sonic quality is so good. And they had the best musicians in the world playing on their albums. And you can hear that. I mean, they're almost like a jazz fusion band.
Yeah.
But really kind of put together like a jazz band. Like, here's the charts, man. Sit down and play it.
And that's, for me, that's probably one of the strikes against them.
Yeah.
Not because of the sound, but for year, and even still on some audio gigs, mm-hmm. audio guys love to play Steely Dan as an audio check.
To test, yeah.
It drives me crazy. It's like, do we have anything else other than Steely Dan?
Steely Jam. Now that would be a good name for like a Steely Dan jam band.
But that's an interesting cover,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's like a
Praying Mantis
or something close up. And I've always loved the cover. I mean, it's weird. But I was just thinking, man, this thing looks, obviously I got it used, looks really well played. Yeah. Dr. Wu is on here. That's another great song. Any World, Chain Lightning, Throw Back the Little Ones, Your Gold Teeth too.
And where does this fall in their releases?
It's early. It's early on. It came out in 1975.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it was way right when they kind of had started.
And you know what? This has like the fold over stuff. This could be see how it's folded over here.
Oh yeah. I've got some albums like that too.
I think that it may be an import. It could be a British version of it. I mean, it's ABC Records and it says Los Angeles. It says printed in USA. I don't know. But yeah, it's so weird. I mean, I could have sworn that I did not have this record. I'm sitting there flipping through my Steely Dan stuff this morning, and there it is. So I'm glad that we're doing this because...
You're discovering stuff you didn't know you had.
Or I forgot that I had.
Yeah, and I'll have to go back and listen to some of these songs because I'm not as familiar with...
A lot of them.
Some of them, when I say them, it's like, I've heard that song, but I don't know it.
Yeah. Well, that's the great thing about doing these theme shows, man. It gets you more familiar with your stuff.
But this song, my next one, I know very well. U2.
Yes.
On the War album, Sunday Bloody Sunday. And this is one that I knew was going to be in this show because this is the first song on side one.
Mm-hmm.
And
it mentions it twice.
Yeah, it mentions it's Sunday. Bloody Sunday. And they're not being all British or UK, even though they're Irish. They're being they're talking about a legendary day in Irish history.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out in 83. And it's one of U2's most political songs. And the lyrics just describe the horror felt by Derry, where British troops shot and killed unarmed civil rights protesters in 72.
Yeah, I remember this is like one of the first songs that I heard from them.
Oh.
And it was very, you know, politically driven.
Yeah.
And I was, 9 years old at the time? So I missed out on that early U2 experience. I was coming out of my early 80s country bumpkin stage at that point. But yeah, this is one of the first ones. Even though I knew I didn't have it, this is one of the first ones I thought of.
Yeah, and the the version of this song that gets all the play is the live at Red Rocks.
Yeah, with all the like fog and
it's so cool looking. And
yeah. Oh, that is Red Rocks, isn't it?
Yeah, that is Red Rocks.
Yeah, that's a very cool live performance for sure. Yeah.
And this is really when U2 was starting to become bigger. This is when they were on their rise up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, 4 years before the Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
But no, they're such an interesting band to be one of the biggest bands in the world. I kind of look at them. I look at Metallica. You know, there's a couple others who are literally just the biggest bands in the world.
Yeah, and they this was their third release, I mean, following Boy and October. Mm-hmm. And it was probably their most rockin' album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the drums were just very omnipresent everywhere.
He's one of my favorites. I know he's not touring with them.
Yeah.
And he's not playing in those shows at the Sphere with them, but he's always been a favorite.
Yeah, their rhythm section is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, everything about the band. I mean, the Edge on guitar does some just otherworldly stuff. Yeah. Nobody else was doing what he was doing on guitar at the time.
Very distinctive.
Yeah.
When you hear him, you know who it is. In all of the popular music out there, it's hard to stand out as any kind of musician.
Oh, yeah.
As a singer, as a drummer, guitarist. But the Edge absolutely does. I mean, when you hear him, you know it's him.
Yeah.
And that's cool. I'd love to see that show at the Sphere.
Yeah, it'd be neat to see him. I mean, after seeing the full band several times, it's hard to go back and not have one of the band members there.
Right. The first time in their history that they've not played together at live shows. So that's a good one, man. I knew you'd bring that.
Oh, yeah.
So even if I had it, I wouldn't have.
And it is... It probably ranks up there as certainly in my top 10 U2 songs.
Oh, yeah, it's way up there. Well, I feel like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is like the next Dark Side of the Moon, because I feel like we talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
It's a double album. It's considered Elton's high point, which it's his eighth record, I think. And this was released in June of 1973. Actually, is this right? Recorded in May of 1973 and released June 29th of 1973. So there were three songs off of this album: Daniel, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. But for me, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road has always been my favorite Elton John song.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting when you have an album that's got that many songs on it, there's going to be, you know, some different feeling stuff, but it's just so, so fantastic. Funeral for a Friend is on here. Love Lies Bleeding, Candle in the Wind, Benny and the Jets, which that would have been another single off of this. Huh.
And your favorite song, Jamaica Jerk-Off.
Jamaica Jerk-Off. Yeah, that's another good one. Roy Rogers is a good one. Social Disease, Dirty Little Girl, Sweet Painted Lady. It's a great record in the art direction. And everything is just so cool. But when you think about it, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting is a rockin' song. Kind of not typical of Elton John.
No, he was more of the ballad storyteller.
Yeah, so that's why I love that. Even though that song is overplayed, overdone.
I never really get sick of it. I knew you would bring this one, so that was...
Yeah, yeah. And when I was in a promising local band, we actually played Saturday Night's for Fighting, because why not try to play an Elton John song?
It's probably a Saturday night when you're playing.
Yeah, well, we played all the damn time, but yeah. And you can see, I've pointed it out before, but I got this album for $8, so it's been a while. I love it. I've got multiple copies of this record. Yeah. This is like a greatest hits
Yeah, it's a really him. And it's a, I mean, you get two albums. It's a lot to dig into if you're going to listen to it front to back.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't have the length of the album, but it. These are not short songs. I think Funeral for a Friend and Love Lies Bleeding, kind of one song. I think that's 8 or 9 minutes right there. But, you know, to start a double album off with an instrumental track like Funeral for a Friend, that's ballsy. But when you become the biggest star in the world,
why not?
You can do ballsy things.
Yeah.
All right, man.
All right.
Next.
So, why not another Saturday night?
Why not?
Another Saturday night. Grateful Dead, Skeletons from the Closet. And
oh, what a great collection, right?
Yeah, it's another collection. Fun art. Look at this art.
Yeah.
It's really, really super cool.
Yeah.
You've got her using her fingernail as the stylus.
Oh,
with the skeleton
being the skeleton's playing the turntable. I've never really noticed it. Is the skeleton smoking or is that?
Well, he's dead. Why not?
Or is that one of those jazz cigarettes?
No, he's smoking.
You think he's smoking a joint though? Or is it a cigarette?
Who knows? With the dead, it could be both.
I think both.
Yeah.
I think they would recommend the left-handed cigarette.
Yeah. Though.
Yeah, what else is on this, man?
It's a good collection. I don't know that
it's... Golden Road to Unlimited Devotion, Truckin', Rosemary, Sugar Magnolia, St. Stephen, Uncle John's Band. Oh, I love that song. That's my favorite Dead song.
And I think the reason I got that, because it came up, it was super cheap.
So Casey Jones, Mexicali Blues.
I didn't have a bunch of Dead at the time when I bought that.
You know, we have talked about it on multiple shows that we never talk about the Grateful Dead, but we mention them a lot.
Yeah, we mention them a lot.
And we say neither of us are big fans, but this is a really good collection.
It's a good collection.
And the other thing about the Dead is if you are a collector and you're one of those people that just likes buying as much stuff as you can from one artist, the Dead's live catalog is just endless. I mean, Rhino just releases show after show. And how cool is it that they have those?
And the other thing with the Dead, unlike a lot of other bands, almost all those old live shows sound phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The recordings were really good on the Dead shows. I mean, I wish some of the old Doors shows sounded as good as the Dead shows.
Yeah.
I mean, or any number of punk bands.
I don't know. I just think that, you know, in the middle, you know, the late 60s, early 70s, live, until Frampton Comes Alive, until Kiss Alive, until Cheap Trick at Budokan, I don't think that live performance, capturing a live performance, was a priority for a record label. They probably just didn't even think that it would be a thing, but it certainly became a thing in the 70s.
Yeah, and it may have not have been a thing for the label, but the Dead embraced it, and they had a section set up where people
could come record.
You can put your 4-track recorder and all everything you want right there.
In that regard, they were definitely ahead of their time.
Yeah.
For sure.
They saw the future and... The future is now.
There are literally like 5 songs on here that I really, really like. I have this on CD, but I have no Grateful Dead on vinyl, so I need to do something about that.
Probably, if I'm recommending a vinyl to pick up for somebody, it would be, and I have it on CD, but I don't have it on vinyl yet, is The Dead 72 Europe.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That's a really, it's a 3-album set. It's the one with the ice cream cone guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome, man. Good on you for bringing the Dead.
Got to have some Dead. Oh, and did I say 72?
72. Okay. Well, the next song that I immediately thought of was Monday Monday by the Mamas and the Papas. And this was released in 1966, written by John Phillips. Recorded by the Mamas and the Papas. And, you know, we've talked about the Wrecking Crew many times. Glenn Campbell, Leon Russell. I mean, the list, you know, the woman that plays bass, can't remember her name right now. But, you know, the Wrecking Crew is basically the band on this. And just out of this world good. But the thing about the Mamas and the Papas is that they're kind of that folky, like 60s folk movement, but they're pop stars, man. They're pop singers.
Yeah, it's really pop stars.
And the harmonies that they, the way their voices blended together. I mean, when I was growing up, whether it was my aunt or my mom and dad or anybody in my family listening to music, inevitably they'd be listening to the Mamas and the Papas.
They would pop on the turntable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I loved it. I mean, there are things that have come out about John Phillips since then
yeah.
that have not made him
not so flattering,
not put him in the best light, but strictly. And this is one of those things that we talk about a lot where you have to separate the artist from the art.
Right.
And how hard it is to do that. But if you're talking about songs named after days of the week, I defy you not to come up with Monday, Monday, right?
So a funny story about this song, that song in particular, my college roommate and I had surfboards.
Oh,
and so
of course you did. Why would you not? Did.
So we bought them at some place that it was like an outdoor store, and they're like, we need to get these. They had them as a display, and they just cleared them out. So we bought them super cheap.
Was it Galleons?
No, it was in Evansville.
Oh, okay.
It was a outdoor store. I think it was
Dunham's?
I think it was called Gillis or something.
Oh, okay.
So anyhow, so we go down to Florida to surf for a couple of days. We had like 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
And on the way down, Brian buys a cassette at some gas station, the Mamas and the Papas, and we listen to that over and over.
Well, I mean, it's a California.
Yeah, Monday, Monday.
Yeah, California Dreaming. It's, I mean, if you're going to go surfing.
It was the greatest hits.
Yeah, yeah. I got this recently at a show, and it's one of those gold record award. It's got that printed on there. But, you know, I love the, look at this. Performing, got a tambourine, Mama Cass there.
Wow, they're
Michelle
really,
Phillips.
They're really dressed up.
Yeah, yeah. There were probably some chemicals involved.
You think?
Phillips said that he wrote the song quickly in about 20 minutes, and, you know, that's kind of hard to believe with as big of a song as it has become. But let's see. Succeeding Good Lovin' by the Young Rascals in the number one position, the event marked the first time in the history of the Billboard Hot 100, two songs with pregnant pauses were consecutive number one hits. Huh. Because Monday Money includes the pregnant pause before the coda, which modulates up a semitone. So, you know, Good Lovin' has that pause in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Where it almost sounds like the song's over, and then it continues with the chorus. So I didn't know that until I just read that.
That's an interesting stat.
Yeah. And in March of 1967, the Mamas and the Papas won a Grammy for this song in the category Best Contemporary Rock and Roll Group Performance, Vocal or Instrumental.
Hmm.
And in 2008, the song was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. So there you go. And this is ABC Records. Yeah. What's your next one?
Next. All right. Let's go back a day, and you knew I was going to bring this. Velvet Underground and Nico.
I still don't have this record.
Really?
Yeah. I need to get it.
Yeah, you need to get it. Sunday morning, and this song is just, really, I love everything
on the record.
On the record, I mean, this first record is Nico's voice. I've even got some releases from Nico.
Mm-hmm.
Her voice, it's just so ethereal.
It is. It is otherworldly.
Yeah, it's not one of those things you want to listen to for hours on end.
Right.
But it's a good mood setter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and this. Of course, the album came out in 66.
1966. Let's turn it back around because it's really known for the cover.
Yeah, it's known for the
cover. Even though this isn't is this one of the ones that
No, this is one of the reprints I bought when it came out in probably the 80s.
Yeah, the Repop. I almost bought
I've that. Got the Repop.
I almost got something on my shirt
there. I probably have. I've even got a whole cover album of this record.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You've talked about that before. No, I just, I want to get that Repop where you peel it off and the banana's pink.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, this band and this album is really kind of like a collision of Lou Reed and Andy Warhol and the art scene in New York at the time. And it's just such an interesting collision of people and
there was
personalities.
So much going on at the time in New York. And I mean, for a pretty well-known artist to do the album cover, even though Andy was kind of a producer, is pretty legendary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
he was playing, you know, the Rolling Stones. Mm-hmm. He was starting to do stuff with all kinds of players in that world.
But this really kind of raised him, raised his awareness. And and I, not that I don't respect the Velvet Underground, but I'm not sure that if Andy Warhol hadn't been involved with this, that the Velvet Underground would be as huge as they are now.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's not like they became a big international hit.
No, but
I mean, they were just, they were one of those bands that operated on the fringes that was an influence for everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, Andy Warhol kind of been, Andy Warhol kind of became associated with pop art, you know, as time went on, you know, with the Campbell's soup cans and then the Marilyn Monroe portraits. And, just amazing visual artist. He was also a filmmaker. I mean, the guy did everything.
Well, and they were all living in the same space and playing in the same space at the time. So who knows what would happen in that space?
Was it called The Factory?
The Factory.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of reminded me of the Factory Records unboxing that you
And it was did. Kind of the same theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of an artist commune.
Yeah. Yeah, really. That's what it was.
Kind of thing. Yeah. That's a good one, man. I figured that would be here.
Yeah. You knew it had to be here. And let's see. This song, it's one of the songs that's been covered by tons of bands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Matthew Sweet. Oh, Nina Hagen, Nick Cave, The Feelies. OMD.
Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Yes.
Yeah, I know what the OMD stands for.
But it's one of those songs that just sticks with you.
Yeah.
It's been called, what was somebody called? Dreamy Pop.
That's...
Dreamy pop. It is very dreamy. I think the whole album has a dreamy feel.
Druggy.
Druggy, yes.
Druggy pop.
Yeah, and this was, you know, given the time it came out, it's when really LSD was starting to make its way heavy into the music industry. And a lot of the artists were taking LSD regularly.
Yeah. Enter Sid Barrett.
Enter Sid Barrett.
Enter and exit Sid Barrett.
Yeah. I think I read something recently where, you know, there was a period, and it was around this time, 67, 66, John Lennon was taking LSD daily.
All right.
All right. You go, John.
Well, we could do a whole show on this album.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
easily.
They say that the Velvet Underground, like, created thousands of bands, right?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely believe that.
Yeah.
And the B-side of the single was Femme Fatale, which I may like.
Better. Yeah. I'll have to give it another
listen. I like the whole thing. But it is. It's dreamy pop. I think that's a good way to
describe it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good one.
You're next.
Well, you knew I'd find a way to shoehorn Midland.
Oh, and my gosh.
There's a song, King of Saturday Night, on here that's really great. This album, awesome. This is The Last Resort, Greetings From, And they've been described as like neo-traditional country, but they have like the three-part harmony thing going on, and just the songwriting is fantastic.
What's neo-traditional country? I'm still struggling with that.
New, but traditional country. And like the first time I heard them, I'm like, man, this sounds like something I would have heard in like 1979.
Oh, okay.
So kind of outlaw country.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's, I hate like assigning a certain genre.
Really?
To music. I mean, I think that there's a good... It's a good way to talk about things, especially in a historic point of view. But this is really just pop music. But yeah, King of Saturday Night. And it's actually Jess Carson, the guy that writes all their songs, that sings on that. Usually Mark Weistrack is the guy that sings lead. But yeah, I'm waiting for them. This is 2022 when this came out. They have a new album coming out soon. And I think my wife and I are going to go see them in Texas in April. So,
well, that looks like where that photo was taken is Texas.
Yeah.
Or somewhere close.
But they're like my latest fascination. Cam Duddy, his dad is a famous cinematographer. He was like a B unit director for The Abyss.
And
he started at ILM, Industrial Light and Magic.
Wow.
I mean, he's a big time guy in the film industry. And he, Cam, has actually directed a bunch of videos for people like Bruno Mars and dudes like that. So,
oh, that's cool. That's cool. I mean, not that country has a certain look, but if they didn't have the hats, you wouldn't know they're a country band.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are definitely like traditional country, like the steel guitar in this.
Yeah.
Steel guitar can be overused, but the way that these songs are written, the way that it's recorded, it's crazy. It's the best music, the best new music that I've heard in a long time, just from a sonic and like construction standpoint. I don't hear anything that catches my ear like that. And when I heard a song called Drinking Problem off their first record, and I'm like, who in the hell is this? Because it sounded like something I would have heard in 1979.
Yeah.
And so I'm absolutely on board with these guys. And if you look at their Instagram and all their social, I mean, they have fun.
How big's their catalog?
This is their third record.
Oh,
actually their fourth record. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's they haven't been around a long, long time.
No, their first record came out in 2017. They've been around since 2014. And they had two records, and then they put a record out that's kind of that they recorded early as like a demo record. So technically they have four records out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm on board, guys. Waiting for that next one. What's your next one?
This is a early Cure collection. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing about this record, it is a collection after they've only put out like
three records.
Two, maybe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's super early. This came out in 1980, and the band really only started 78.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their first album was released in 79.
So let me guess which song is on here.
It's not the one you think.
Is it a Thursday song?
Nope, it's a Saturday.
Oh, okay.
10:15 Saturday Night.
Okay. Man, it is.
It's not Friday in Love. I don't have that on vinyl.
No?
Friday I'm in Love.
Yeah. Is that Disintegration that's on?
No. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Right at the moment.
That's fine.
But I don't have it on vinyl.
Interesting. I like that song.
That's there's a lot of stuff. And I was never a massive Cure fan, mm-hmm. but the early Cure stuff was more goth
mm-hmm.
and a little darker.
Less poppy.
Less poppy. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody from the record company probably got involved and kind of changed their trajectory.
Yeah. Well, they've just become like the like goth 80s goth band.
Yeah.
Right. And they're still touring, you know? And I got to tell you, Robert Smith is kind of a hero to me for wanting to keep ticket prices down.
Yeah, he's tried a lot of stuff that just... I mean, it's like the big... He's up against the big machine, but the machine's stronger.
Yeah.
And it's... He's trying.
Yeah.
But it's hard to resist.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Well, that's a good one. I've never seen this.
It's a European import. And
I love the cover.
And it's one of those things that... one of the record stores in the mall, not the one I worked at, but the other one.
Yeah.
They had all these European imports that would be cheaper than a lot of new stuff.
That's right. So and that's where you got it.
Yeah. So I think this came out in, this is maybe from Holland. It's on Fiction Records.
Wow. February of 80, huh?
Yeah.
Cool. Post-punk.
Post-punk. That's, but I mean, this has a bunch of Cure songs I really liked. This was
awesome.
the Cure that really connected with me. Like the album Singles on a Beach came out when I was in college, but yeah. I wasn't into the Cure enough to pick that up. I like this.
That's great. Yeah, that's cool when you find something that's kind of rare.
Yeah.
You know, there when you look at some bands, some of them put greatest hits out after only one or two or
yeah.
three records. And the term greatest hits is very loosely used sometimes. It's just a compilation.
Yeah. And this was more of, I don't even think they had enough material to have a greatest hits. It
yeah.
was more of a collection that they're selling in another country.
Yeah.
Because listening to a couple of podcasts about, record labels at that time, they were really trying to branch out. Like the UK was happening, the US was happening, but if you could make inroads into any other country, the record companies were all in.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
So they're, you know, they want to just, because there was no way to spread the word other than the band being there.
Right. Right. That's a good point. That is cool. I have not seen that before.
Yeah, it's one of those that you're not going to see many of.
Was that your last one?
No, I should have one more.
Okay. Well, this is my last one because I had a samesy with
you.
Oh,
yeah, we had a samesy.
And I figured 8 days a week would be a perfect
yes.
one to bring. This was actually originally live at the Hollywood Bowl. And then when Ron Howard put the 8 days a week doc out, that live recording became the soundtrack for the movie. So they've done a lot of fixing up and it sounds better than it ever has, and you get to hear the Beatles live. And I just love the cover. I love the mix of songs that they do on it. And, you know, believe it or not, there aren't a lot of, well, I don't think there are any days of the week songs other than 8 days a week.
Yeah,
by
it
the
was
Beatles.
The eighth day.
Yeah, there you go.
What is the eighth day of the week called?
Beatles Day.
Beatles Day.
Yeah, I love the artwork on that too.
Have you heard the original of
yeah.
this?
Funny thing is, before that album, before that movie came out, my friend Scott gave me a digital recording of the live at the Hollywood Bowl. And
with the
well,
fix
not a
up,
digital, but he gave me a CD.
Yeah. So the fix up, how does this sound compared
oh,
to that?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, there aren't a lot of really good live recordings of the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, it was just not a thing.
No.
At the time. So very cool. And, you know, I need to watch. I haven't even watched the whole film. I've only watched parts of it. So,
yeah, I'm not even sure I've watched that one either.
Yeah, when I heard about it, I'm like, Ron Howard doing a Beatles movie? Okay,
okay.
Whatever, man. I mean, he can pull anything off, really. Yeah, let's take a look real quick. I know I'm tempting fate by pulling this out of here.
Uh-oh,
losing the hype
sticker.
It's square though, so that's all right. Both of them. Let's look at
two hype stickers.
Yeah. And it's kind of got the jazz treatment in here with a little story.
A little story, that's...
Fans shrill, cries greet Beatles on Bowles stage.
That'll
happen.
That'll be some reading. There's probably more reading inside, just beautiful pictures.
Oh, and then, of course, you have, you know, some... Oh, there they are, taking a bow. Conquering the world.
Very cool.
Yeah. What's your last day of the week?
Last day of the week. Well, our good old buddy, Aladdin Sane.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm sorry, I'm struggling to find... Oh, Drive-In Saturday Night. David Bowie. And it's one of the songs that I don't know if it if it's one that I know that well, but I really liked it because it said drive-in. I love drive-ins. Drive-ins are fun.
It brings back so many memories, man.
And that's what you do on a Saturday night.
Yeah, you go to the drive-in.
Yeah.
You sneak a bunch of people in your car.
Yeah.
They hide in the trunk.
Yeah.
And you pay for one ticket because, of course, you're going to take a 1978 Ford LTD to the drive-in.
Sure.
Alone.
Alone.
Right.
And this, to me, this is the second most
recognizable
Bowie persona.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean.
And it was just around for this record, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that one record he did.
I love the back character with the outline.
Yeah. And this is, of course, one of those repops, but it sounds so darn good.
Yeah, yeah. He is, looking back, he's just a one-of-a-kind kind of artist. You know, we've talked about Madonna kind of going through different phases and stages. I guess Cher kind of has too, but nobody's done it to the degree that David did.
No.
Just saying, okay, I've done that. I'm putting that to the side and...
And just never doing it again.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy that he was able to pull it off.
Yeah. I never got to see him.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. You saw him at that show at the Murat, right?
Yeah. And it was a magical show. It was great because he had an... At that point, he had embraced the kind of greatest hits thing.
Yeah.
And so it was a greatest hits show, but it was wonderful.
Oh, to see him in a place like that.
Yeah. And it's
can't
such
a... Can't believe I missed it.
It's such an intimate environment.
Right.
But, he was enjoying it. I mean, he was very happy. I don't think I have ever heard about David being upset with an audience.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have that kind of personality.
He's a professional.
Yeah.
And a meme.
And a meme, yeah.
That's a good one. I looked for Thursday's, he has a song called Thursday's Trial.
Yeah.
I do not have that album.
I do not have that
I
album
I have Aladdin
either.
Sane. I did not bring it. This one slipped through the cracks, but that's okay because we only had one Samesy song, and it wasn't even the same album. I had it on a greatest hits and you had it on Between the Buttons.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
And there's the one day we left out Wednesday, but there's a Monkey song. Stay with me. There was a Monkey song. What is it?
Yeah, I've got it too.
Is the Wednesday on there?
No. This one has Saturday's Child on it.
Thought it was the Monkees.
And this is a Record Store Day color vinyl repress of that.
Wrong.
That I just got. But
it doesn't have the Wednesday song.
No, but Saturday's Child is the reason I brought that one. And then tomorrow's going to be another day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of falls in line.
Anywho, it's been fun talking about our collections through the eye of these themes.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a numbers show, too.
Yeah, numbers.
We could probably do 10 numbers shows. We're also going to do more ranked shows. And I think we came to the conclusion we want to do the Rolling Stones ranked. So that would be like a top 10 ranked And that's
just the top 10.
Yeah, and that's going to be tough to do too.
Yeah, that'll be tough.
Because I think the Stones are also one of those groups that different people like different eras and different songs.
And maybe we don't even have to agree on that.
No, we'll argue.
Yeah.
That'll stir the pot.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
Well, we want to thank all of you guys for coming along on this little journey with us. We want to remind you to go to the YouTube channel, check out all the video snacks we have on there, which Jacob has been super busy putting stuff together. If you thumb through that, there's just beautiful thumbnail after beautiful thumbnail.
There's snacks and full meals.
Yeah, full meals. But we also want to remind you that through YouTube Music, you can listen to the podcast audio only, or you can watch the podcast on there too. And it's nice because if you listen to the podcast on there, you can let your screen go to sleep and it'll keep playing. So that's very important.
That's
to remember.
A new update. Yeah. We're not sure if it's through YouTube or iOS, but yeah, it's an update.
Yeah. And we also want to remind you to go to our social media pages. We want you to tell us what you think about the show. Give us ideas for shows. Tell us what unboxings you'd like to see. Or, you know, we have some stuff with equipment that we're going to start talking about too. So if you have any equipment stuff and we can get access to it, let us know and we may give that a shot. Any other things that those people out there need to do for us?
Subscribe and share and like stuff.
Yeah. Subscribe, share, like, listen to the podcast, watch all the stuff on the YouTube channel. Man, you guys have a long laundry list of stuff that you need to do for us. But we appreciate you guys coming along for the show. So for Wheels, I'm Jay, and we'll catch you all the next time around.